The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the program today. Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd, and I can honestly tell you today that I have one of my favorite people in all of Central Florida on the air with me. Sarah Trollinger has been leading House of Hope for several years. I'll let her tell us all of the exact number and the details. I met Sarah back in the mid-80s. Back in the days when I was just first in Florida, and for a couple of years, I worked with WAJL, Al Chubb, and the people over there. We Acclaim Jesus Lord was the title of that station, and that's where I met you, Sarah Trollinger. Welcome to my program again.
Well, thank you so much, Mike. It's good to be back with you after so many years.
Yeah, you know, the last time you were here, you were up in our temporary studios, and you and the director of the National House of Hope was there as well. And our new digs, I don't think you've been in our new studios yet, so we've got to get you in here.
I can't wait to see it. Because I remember when you were under construction.
Yes.
But I know it must be beautiful because you had a great start then.
It's really nice, and we love it up here. Sarah, honestly, I'm not just saying that. You are one of the most loved people, and the entire Central Florida residents that have been around any time at all have heard about the wonderful work of House of Hope and how that you began this. And I think it's always good because we always have new people joining in on the program. Why don't you give us, first of all, a brief history of how you began and when you began this wonderful ministry?
Oh, thank you. I'm humbled by your comments of the praise, because, you know, everything that happens on the forefront happens behind the scenes on our knees in prayer. So God gets all the glory. But it was exciting in 1985. Well, before that, I was teaching school in Central Florida. I taught emotionally handicapped in high school, and then taught behind bars at Juvenile Detention Center. And it was there that we were not allowed to mention the name of Jesus or pray with them or work with the parents. And the same ones kept coming and going and in detention. And my heart was touched by seeing them not getting any help. And so one night in my distress, I cried out to the Lord. And in his still small voice, he said, "Sarah, I want you to start a place and call it House of Hope." Well, that was in 1985, and I could hardly wait the next day to share with some of my friends who also had such a heart for teenagers and getting them reconciled back to their parents. So we started out, we had no money, we had no location, but we had a passion, and we knew that we had heard from the Lord. And so it was exciting to start looking for a place. And one day I found someone that told me to go look on 30th Street. A lady had two little houses that she was going to sell, but they thought that she'd already given them to a realtor. And when I got down there, she said, "No, I'm giving these houses to a realtor tomorrow. But tell me what you're interested in." And I said, "We're looking for a place to help girls." We started with girls. And I explained the mission, and that our mission is based on Malachi 4:6, turning the hearts of the fathers and mothers to the children and the children back to the fathers and mothers, lest there be a curse on the land. So we knew that God had called us to help break that curse. So when I shared it to her, she said, "Oh, I've always had such a heart for teenagers." And she said, "I'm asking $117,000. And, well, that was like millions to us.
Oh, yes.
And it was. Anyway, she said, "I'll talk to my husband. Maybe he'll come down a little bit." We didn't ask her to. But what I did not tell her was that two of us had written a grant to Edith Bush Foundation asking for, and thought the Lord told us to ask for $95,000 to find a place. So we'd send it in, and you know, when you send a grant in, you never get much response. I mean, it's a miracle if they receive you. So anyway, I didn't tell her that, but she calls me back in a couple of weeks and she said, you know, we are so in favor of what you're doing. If you'd like the property, we'd like to let you have it for $95,000. And I said, we'll take it. And she laughed like you probably are laughing. And she said, but I need a down payment. And I said, how about $200? And that's when she really laughed. And she said, okay, but in 2 weeks will be the closing, and you'll have to have all the money then. So in 2 weeks she called me and she said, okay, it's time for the closing. And I went to the post office that morning, and before the closing, there was a letter from Edith Bush saying, we're happy to give you the $95,000.
My goodness.
We took it, even before some of it was even matched. So we took it to the closing and left there with our $200 down payment to start House of Hope. And it's been one miracle after another ever since then. And I know one of your favorite stories that I told you one time was about when we first got to the house.
Yes.
Volunteers came in, and they were so working so hard, but they came out with little flea bites all over them. And they said, we can't work in there anymore. You've got to take care of these fleas. So I called a guy from Orkin, and he came down and he said, oh, these are matted in the carpets, the eggs. He said, I don't think I can ever get them all. You'll have to probably get new carpet. So he left, and one of the volunteers came to me and said, Sarah, you've got to do something. So I was reading in my Bible in Luke 10:19 that says, behold, I've given you authority over serpents and over all the power of the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and so I considered that was fleas too. So, and nothing shall by any means harm you. So I went into the house with my Bible and I read that quote out. And I said, and I cursed the eggs in Jesus' name. And the next day we went in and there was not one flea to be found or one egg.
Wow.
So that just gave us excitement to say, Lord, we're on the right track.
Well, you have one. Yeah, I know where you've got one story after another. I remember one of them having to do with cheese and just unbelievable stories that really have just marked this ministry, right?
Yes, yes. You know, everything that there is a miracle. But the greatest miracle is in the lives of these teenagers and parents, because I've never, I don't know of a teenager that has ever left there who didn't confess Jesus Christ as their personal Savior. That doesn't mean that they left there and they were perfect, because, you know, with all of us, there are areas in our life we always have to keep working on, but at least our program strongly exposes them to Jesus, and the parents have to be involved. And that's where the problem mostly comes from. But not many programs encourage the parents to be there, because we have them there an hour a week for personal counseling. We have them for parenting class every Tuesday night for 2 hours, and then they can visit their teenager on Sunday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So it's and then when they go home, the parents know how to set boundaries and how to, you know, deal with the problems. And the parents leave their heel too, because there are areas in their lives that we work on.
You know,
so
when you think about the role that parents play, I mean, it really doesn't help. It doesn't help that child, and it certainly is not going to give them a better leg up to do a program without the help of parents. That just doesn't work. And that's one of the things that I love about it. Yet our culture, and I know that what you were dealing with back then, were a bunch of kids that were obviously not going the right direction. And some of them had already had struggles with their parents. And you used back then a term that I had never heard before until that time, where a lot of kids back in that day were just considered almost throwaway kids. And that's
what
you were reaching out to. But I love the fact that you continued, and even from the beginning, demanded, really, in a good way, that the kids' parents not be just kind of off scot-free and out of responsibility for these kids.
Exactly. And today we have grandparents who've taken over the responsibility of raising the teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to come. So, you know, it's a whole different generation from when they were that age. But we train the parents. You know, they're all open. They want help. They come there crying out, saying, if you can't help my child, I'm going to lose him or her. And, you know, so it's exciting to see the parents being willing, because they know this is probably their last chance to change things.
Yes.
With their teenager.
And, you know, I know that we're here. One of the reasons why you're on the program today is to talk about a very exciting event that is coming up on Friday, November 5th at 11:30 in the morning. It's called Threads of Hope, and it's a fashion show, basically, that will be using the models. Not all of them will be the kids from the House of Hope, but some of them are. And you've got some additional people coming to take part as well. This is a big to-do event, and it's going to be held at First Baptist Orlando. And tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll get back to the ministry of House of Hope in a moment. But I want to make sure in this segment that we cover this fashion show. Tell us a little bit about some of the details.
Okay. Every year we have a fashion show. It's a friendraiser and a fundraiser, and people can get tickets online now. They're available, and it's exciting to see the teenagers. All the boys and girls will be in the show, and you have no idea what it does for their self-concept to be able to get on a new outfit, get on the stage. They've never been on the stage before. And I wish you could see their faces when they're, I was there this morning watching them try on their outfits or helping a little bit. Anyway, it's got being held, as you said, at First Baptist Church in Faith Hall, and it's sponsored by Macy's, and the outfits are so neat, and they get to help pick them out to a point.
That is wonderful.
Anyway, yeah, and then Greg Warmus is the MC, a man from Channel 9. Amanda Ober is from Channel 2. And then we have a wonderful meal and while we're watching the fashion show. So it's, as I said, it's a fundraiser and a fundraiser.
So it is there for a purpose, and yet that's the fundraising part, but it's really doing the other thing as well. It's fellowship, it's getting with other people in the community, and it's really appropriate that so many people like the two you mentioned from the TV stations, they are there because of the fact that this is a community event, and it always has been. And Sarah, I don't know if you realize just how ahead of your time you were back in the mid-80s when you began this ministry, when you began trusting God. You were so far ahead of what we're seeing in this, you know, they often talk about it, the other pandemic being that of the opioid crisis that's going on right now. Now, the opioids weren't called that back then. They weren't as talked about as openly back then in the 80s. It was just drug abuse was a major thing back then. All sorts of drugs, heroin, opium, they were all there. But your heart to take these kids that are maybe captured and really trapped by this lifestyle, that's what they are. And they are looking for hope. Like you said earlier, they're looking. And I believe you're right. I believe the parents greatly are as well. Whether they realize just how desperate they are, they may not be all the time, but they are looking for hope too. And that's so appropriate that you named your ministry House of Hope.
Well, actually, the Lord did. He told me what to do.
Isn't that something?
But you know, you're talking about opioids. There are so many other variables today. One thing is social media. That is huge. Causing destruction, because we have teenagers that come that are sexually abused. They are addicted to a lot of negative stuff that's on their website. And so we get all kinds. And so now, like I said, the social media is a big deterrent.
Mm-hmm. It is. Creates this thing called peer pressure, which we've heard about for years. But
exactly.
It's that times 100 because of the fact that now we're living in a kind of a world where people can just get shut in and shut down all online, not even face-to-face, but the intimidation factor that all kids have felt in one way or another in years past is now there's not even a safety in the world on their computer. So they can be badgered, they can be bullied, they can be mocked, and sadly, the outcome for a lot of these kids in the world today It's not good. So suicide rates are up higher than ever before. Yes, this is a tough time.
Suicide's the number two cause of death among teenagers.
It's so true.
It is. That's a sad thing, though. We have a girl there that tried to commit suicide 6 times, and but praise the Lord, she wasn't able to do it. But here are these, I look at them as being our leaders, our warriors for tomorrow, and that's what we're training them to be. And and they, everyone there knows the Lord. In fact, they, one of their requirements when they come on a certain level, a certain phase, they have to memorize the 91st Psalm and personalize it and put their name in it. And every single one of them know it. Actually, at the fashion show, they're going to be saying it in unison.
Is that right? Now,
yes.
Now, this fashion show, Friday, November 5th, and through a very generous sponsor, I have a limited number of seats, tickets for you to get to go. If you would like to go to this wonderful event called Threads of Hope, it's a fashion show put on by House of Hope, Friday, November 5th, 11:30 a.m. I think you said till 1 p.m., correct?
Yes. That's right, till 1.
11:30 to 1, so it's basically just 90 minutes. And
yeah, starts promptly at 11:30.
Starts promptly at 11:30. If you would like to go, here's a number to write down. Call and leave a message with your name and contact number, 407-752-9828. That's 407-752-9828, and we're going to get you a complimentary ticket paid for by one of the many supporters of this amazing ministry. And we're so grateful. You know, Sarah, before we take a break, I've got to go back and reminisce just a bit more, all the way back to those days in 85 when you would come. You were actually, you had something on the air on WAJL back in those days, right?
I did. I did a little devotional for the morning drive.
And that was my program, The Morning Drive. That was great.
Thank you. It was fun. It was neat doing that.
It was really great. And you were just in the beginning times, right?
Right. Actually, it was a little bit before I even started.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. So anyway, God's faithful.
Well, he is. And when we come back from this break, we'll talk a little bit about a well-known individual who at the time just happened to be the president of the United States, who found himself to be becoming one of House of Hope's biggest fans. We'll tell you all about that coming up in a moment. My guest is just a wonderful person that I'm privileged to know, Sarah Trollinger from the House of Hope. Don't go away. We'll be back with Sarah in just a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're on The Shepherd. We are back now with Sarah Trollinger here on Afternoons with Mike. Thank you for joining us today. Sarah's been telling us about the fashion show that's coming up. It's a fundraiser and a friendraiser. I like that a lot. It's called Threads of Hope. It's coming up on Friday, a week from today, actually. And that is going to be at 11:30 in the morning at First Baptist Orlando in Faith Hall. We do have a limited amount of tickets for a very limited amount of time to give away to this. So be sure and call us right away. If you would like to go, here's the phone number again. It is 407-752-9828. You know, we were talking about the miracle of provision that has marked this ministry, and this thing is normally held at a different venue, and this year for this event, it's almost like you were given another miracle here.
Okay, we always have our fashion show at the Country Club of Orlando, and we'd already sent out the Save the Date card, and I get a call a couple of weeks later. And they said, oh, we are so sorry, but something's happened to the ceiling in the room where our events are held, and we cannot do anything there till the end of the year. So we had no place to go, and we'd already engaged Macy's and Greg Warmoth and Amanda Ober, and several things had already fallen in place. So I quickly got in touch with First Baptist, and they said we'd be delighted to do it. And then I wasn't sure if all the other people who were instrumental in putting this on if their schedules would fit. I called Macy's, and they said, absolutely, we're with you. Then I called Greg Wormuth, and he said, yes, I can change mine. Then Amanda Ober, and she did, and she changed hers. And so everything's on go, and all the boys and girls are modeling. They are so excited. I was just with them at Macy's, and they're picking out their outfits. And as we said earlier, that this is so good for their self-esteem because they never had the opportunity to do something like this.
Your heart, your passion has been that you saw the value of these kids' lives when even at that time, sadly, their own families didn't. And that is something that I believe God has put in your heart. And that's marked you from the very beginning of this ministry.
What a blessing to have that marked in my heart, because that's what my life is all about, is helping save this generation and getting them reconciled to their parents.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that you mentioned that there's another event coming up that the National House of Hope is a part of, and that also is going to be at First Baptist. Tell us a little bit about that.
I don't know. Many of you probably know Shonda Pierce, the Christian comedy artist, everybody's favorite. And I think right now we're in a period where everybody needs to laugh, and she is hilarious. And she's a personal friend of mine. Anyway, she's coming on December the 3rd, on Friday night, to do her Christmas show at First Baptist Church. And it's going to be exciting, and I hope we'll see every one of you there.
Now, tell us a little bit about this, what we've heard you mention, the National House of Hope.
Okay. I travel with Women of Faith and with American Association for Christian Counselors, and would share from the stage and would take a teenager. And anyway, during that time, several years, I'd have people come up to me and say, oh, we need a place like this in our town, where I have such a heart to do this. So I felt like the Lord was calling me to have affiliates and do training and for people who would be interested in either supporting or starting a House of Hope in their area. But as it turns out, today there's an excellent program, one of our affiliates in Kansas City. We have one in Pennsylvania, and we have one in North Carolina, and we have one getting started in Maryland, and House of Hope Orlando is a national model because this is where people come. We have training seminars here where we train people who have a heart. And Carla is the president.
Mm-hmm.
And she and I have just finished doing, I think it was seven training sessions on how to start a House of Hope. For seven Saturdays for 2 hours, and we trained five people from five other states, and so right now they are in the process of getting started. So, as President Reagan said, there needs to be a House of Hope within driving distance of every major city across America.
Now, you brought up the person that I kind of teased in segment one, and that was President Reagan. I can't think of a better person to have in your back pocket as a fan of the ministry than President Ronald Reagan. And yet he was deeply moved. And I know that you've got a story that's got to be one of your favorites to tell regarding President Reagan. Why don't you share that with our listeners?
Okay. Back in 1986, President Reagan came to dedicate Epcot, and we knew that he was coming. And Charlie Reese, who was a syndicated columnist, had written an article about us that came out the very same day that the president was in town. And so President Reagan, we prayed and that he'd see the article. On the way back to the White House, he reads the article, reaches in his pocket, takes his checkbook out, and writes a check for $1,000 from his personal account.
Mm.
Well, that's the attention of people all over. When that hit the front page of the paper the next day. And we started getting volunteers out of the, everywhere. People started coming. Anyway, in 1990, we invited him to receive our first National Humanitarian Award, he and Nancy. And they accepted, and they came, and we spent at least 5 hours with them. They came on campus. They laughed with our teens, and I cried with the teens, and they toured. And then that night we had the award ceremony, and the only DVD he made for a charity, he made for us.
Mm-hmm.
And and we still have it, and everybody still loves it. Anyway, then when he went out of office, presidents make a calendar of the 12 things that touch their hearts the most. And so falling of the Berlin Wall was, I think, that year on in maybe November, October, November. And we are on February, the month he visited us, a picture of us with he and Nancy. And it's in his library out in California. So, yeah, so he's a – oh, something that really touched me is I have a picture in my office of where he kissed me on the cheek.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and I've been privileged. You've shown me that very picture, and that
I know.
that is a keeper right there. That's great.
Yes, it is. Oh, yeah, I haven't washed my face since.
Oh, that is too funny. And to be named, oh my goodness, to be named right. as one of the top 12 memories of his time as a president, that's got to be so meaningful to you.
It is. And Mike, you know, he really loved us because we've never taken one penny from the government. It's all of our support comes from caring people in the community who have a heart after God.
Now, let's talk about that for a second, Sarah, because again, and folks, if you've just tuned in, this is Sarah Trollinger. Sarah leads the incredible ministry called House of Hope in Orlando, and it's been it's really changed a lot since the mid-80s when you began it. Back then, it was primarily and exclusively for the young ladies, and I know that you have it's a co-ed ministry now. And there's an incredible story that we're going to get to in just a minute about what happened when your first location went kind of under eminent domain. What happened is nothing less than just an amazing miracle. Sarah, I think we're talking about something that is a bit of a trend in your life, and that would be miraculous stories.
Praise the Lord.
Yeah, you've had a few of those. But back to the point that you do not receive funding from the government, that is by design, and that's for a real important purpose, correct?
Correct.
Now, because if the government gives you funding, then you fall under the, I guess you could say, the mandates of the government and the control in a lot of areas by the government over your facility, over your ministry, all of that.
Exactly. Yes. So we don't Jesus Christ controls us. So we don't need any government control. And it's a blessing. The Lord told me that at the very beginning, not to take any government funds. And yeah, so there have been some people we've turned away that are not acceptable to our society as far as big organizations, and because of their beliefs that don't go along with ours.
Well, that is, to walk away from funding is not something that every organization that is a nonprofit, it's not something that they do. But I admire your convictions in the Lord.
Yeah, we walked away from, in one situation, from a big organization, they were giving us $75,000 a year. And we said, no, we could not, because our beliefs did not, you know, weren't the same as theirs.
It didn't line up.
That's right.
Yeah, I tell you.
And guess what? After I told the organization, one board member quit on my board because they thought we should take it. And then another, the next year, the money that came in for House of Hope was more than what they had promised.
Isn't that something? God bless you. A different way.
Amen.
We're going to hear another story from Sarah before we take this break. But before that happens, I want to give you the number one more time. If you would like to go, we have a ticket for you to get to go to House of Hope. And that would be the fashion show, Threads of Hope, coming up Friday, November 5th. It's a gala of sorts. It's a fashion show where the models are going to be predominantly some of the young ladies and guys from the ministry itself. But you have some guests as well. And I'll have you tell us about those guest models coming up in a moment. Here's the number, 407-752-9222. 407-752-9828. That's 407-752-9828. And I'm going to get you connected, give you a ticket. Yeah, some of the people that are coming, Sarah, you've got a few guest models, right?
Right, but we try to limit our guest models because everyone wants to see the boys and girls. And we have so many teenagers that are in, boys and girls, in the program that we want to focus on them. And so we've limited to just a couple of people. Mm-hmm. However, Greg Warmoth and Amanda Over, they have outfits that they'll probably mention that they're wearing from
That's
Macy's. Right. So, yeah.
So they've been dressed out by Macy's as well.
Yeah, Greg's already gotten his outfit.
Oh, that's awesome. All right. Now, there's one story I want to tell before we take this break, Sarah. And that story is the story about the eminent domain of your first location. Tell us a brief bit of that story. This is an amazing one.
One day, someone came to House of Hope. This was in 2005. And they said, did you know your property is going to be taken by the Interstate 4? And they're going to come right through your property for and make a drain fill. And I said, you've got to be kidding. And I went downtown to look on the books, and sure enough, the lady said, yeah, they're getting ready to take your property. And I said, what can I do? I have 18 girls. And she said, why don't you write a letter to the state? And I had no idea how to write a letter to the state, but I did. And the man came down, and he said, yeah, we're coming through here. And he said, how much do you want for your property? And I said, oh, about $2 million. He said, I'll be back. And he comes back in a week or so, and he said, we're going to buy it from you. And that money from there.
And he paid $2
million. Yes. And the money went to anyway, so we didn't still have a place to go. And I get in my car and drive around and look for a place. And one night I drove up to this place on 36th Street. Where it dead end, the property, the road dead ended there, and I saw one little house, and everything else was orange trees and grapefruit trees, and I went to the door and knocked, and as I went to the door, the lady said, "You spoke to my little Baptist church. Come on in." So I went in, and we talked for a while, and then I said, "You know, if you ever determined to leave here, would you give us first refusal on the property?" And she said, absolutely. She said, my husband and I are too old now. We can't pick the fruit. We are retired. And she said, if you want to get they want this property, she said, find me a place in Tangerine, Florida. So I never even heard of Tangerine, Florida. So we got busy. And within a couple of weeks, we had found them a location. And they moved there. We got the property. And today, we have 14 buildings. 10 acres. We're on a peninsula, really. It's water on three sides.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that's how we got there. But here's the storyline. So they gave us the money then. That was in 2005. And then they did not start Interstate 4 until 2 or 3 years ago. And I think we were the only ones that got early access.
You got early access that opened the door for a major amount of expansion, and the facility that you have there is nothing less than beautiful. And I was privileged, along with my wife Cindy, to be out there and get a guided tour of this wonderful facility not too terribly long ago with you, Sarah. And what I said at the very beginning of the program today, you are truly one of my favorite people in Central Florida. I really mean it. I've loved you and your heart for the Lord ever since I first met you back in the mid-80s, and respect what God has done. And what I really like about your life, Sarah, is that it is one that is dependent upon the Lord, and it is also one that is marked by just amazing provision from the Lord. That's what you do, and it's just an awesome thing. So thank you for all of that.
Well, thank you, and I am so blessed. You know, I am blessed that the Lord called me to do this. I mean, every day is an exciting day to see how He works in the hearts and lives, not only of the teenagers, but the staff, and then people who come on campus.
Mm-hmm.
So it's God's ministry from morning till night.
It is indeed, and you're a gem, let me tell you. You're one of the shining lights of Central Florida, and I mean it. And folks, one more time, while Sarah's on the line with us, we'll give you this number. It is 407-752-9828. That's the number that we'd love for you to call and get a free ticket to this wonderful event that Sarah and House of Hope are putting on. It's called Threads of Hope. It's a fashion show, and they are friend raising and fundraising on that day at First Baptist on November 5th, 11:30 in the morning to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Sarah Trollinger, it's been a delight to be with you here today.
Well, it's a delight too. And Mike, maybe if you would tell the people to call within the next 2 or 3 days, because the seats are going fast.
They are. That's right. Call right away. Can't promise them. And it's a limited amount of tickets. So, yeah, I got to call right away. God bless you, Sarah. Thank you so very much for being on my program.
And thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you so much. And we'll be back in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. Back again here on the program with a guest in the studio named Ebo Insua. My first time to meet Ebo, a young man that was a football player for, and my Gator friends in Gainesville will just have to listen the other way for a moment here, for FSU. Yes, indeed. Back under the Jimbo days. Ebo, welcome to my program.
Thank you so much for having me. I really do appreciate it.
This is awesome to have a Seminole here and talking in the land. And I know you got to meet another Seminole downstairs with John Crossman. Mm-hmm. He and I are good friends and is on my program. He's on my program fairly regularly. And we always have this discussion of Gator versus Seminole. So, but you were a player. Tell us just a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, just again, thank you so much for having me on. You know, I grew up in Central Florida, was born in actual Toronto, though. Parents actually immigrated, and then we actually ended up moving to Claremont. And, you know, I had grown up there, played football there. And it's funny, you know, I actually live in a house divided. I have two older sisters. The oldest one went to USF, the middle one went to UF, and I was the black sheep who went to FSU.
Oh my goodness. You were a family divided for a fact.
Yep, for a fact. Saturdays for college football were always fun in my household.
Yes. Yeah, and that's probably a need to have three different TVs going for all this stuff that's happening right there. But that is a big rivalry. And, you know, Jimbo obviously has met some recent successes as well. And it's really exciting to see what's going on with him. But congratulations on being a player. And while you were there, you won a national championship.
Yep, that's true. You know, a lot of people said I couldn't do it. But, you know, I was able to persevere, make the team, you know, and you know, we were able to have a great 2, 3, 4 years. You know, ended up winning a national championship. And I really do appreciate everything that Coach Fisher has done. You know, obviously there's some might be a little bad blood between him leaving Florida State and going to Texas A&M. But he did such a great job of just molding men and helping us to become better people. Mm-hmm. You know, and he definitely his faith and his works definitely showed out and helped us just trying to get to the next level. So, you know, I really do appreciate everything that he has done. And we had a great time. You know, we won a lot of games. We won a championship. But I think the people that I played with in those 3 years, they've become some of my closest friends, and they'll actually be at some of them will actually be at my wedding coming up. So.
Well, congratulations on that. Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned your parents immigrated. Mm-hmm. From where?
So my parents are actually from Ghana, West Africa. You know, and they grew up there. You know, it's funny how things work and how God works. You know, my dad never wore a pair of shoes until the age of 12. And my mom, you know, she was a bit more privileged, but she was able to kind of just learn from the brightest and the best people. And both of them, you know, were able to work hard, persevere. My mom is actually a family physician and my dad is a civil engineer. Mm-hmm. So they were able to immigrate from Ghana to actually Toronto, where I was born. And then from Toronto, they were able to actually come here to Central Florida.
So, wow.
You know, it's amazing how God works because I never would have expected it. And I know they wouldn't have either.
That is quite a background. I mean, you're talking about three different nations right there and a long way in between. Mm-hmm. The steps. But here you are and you're now living in the Groveland area.
Groveland, Claremont area.
Mm-hmm, right. That's not too far from Orlando, right down the road. Mm-hmm. And your background, tell us a little bit about what caused you to be interested in politics, because you actually ran and you won. Congratulations.
Thank you. You know, and it's honestly funny, just the route and the journey that I went through to get here. You know, we say that I ran, but I actually ran three times. And you know, the first time, you know, we had kind of just jumped in there and just wanted to do something and kind of make some type of impact. And we didn't do well at all. You know, a lot of people didn't know us, you know, we weren't really out in the community as much, and ended up, you know, running two more times. And the last time I won, you know, by a big majority of the vote. So, you know, God, it's one of those things where, you know, perseverance is really key. And you know, I'm honestly just blessed. You know, I have such a great support staff around me and, you know, they've helped me so much. But you know, honestly, just to rewind to get to how I got there.
Yes.
You know, after graduating, I decided that I wanted to do something, but I wasn't sure exactly what it wanted to be. I was interested in policy, politics, and kind of the world around me and how I can kind of, how I can have actions and take steps to benefit people, you know, and I've kind of learned that from my parents. They're missionaries as well. And they've done so much work just to help people around them and to give back to the community. And I felt that I needed to do something along those lines. So after graduating, I actually moved to Washington, D.C., and I worked on Capitol Hill for a couple years just to learn about legislation and policy and how, you know, what I'm doing up there, how I can actually positively influence the people around me. And after a while, I realized that, you know, although politics is great, you know, it's the local stuff that is actually the one that's going to help the people, you know, help your neighbors, which is why I decided to move back home and run for office and kind of just throw my hat out there and just positively affect as many people as I could.
Now, you attended a college of law. Mm-hmm. So did you graduate as an attorney?
So no, it's actually it's funny because a lot of people always ask me that. But the degree I got is called a Juris Master.
Mm-hmm.
So the normal one is a Juris Doctor. And that's the one that is actually trained to be a lawyer. Practice law, but this one is more so just learning about the law. And a lot of the courses are similar, but at the end, I'm not allowed to take the bar and actually practice.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was more about learning more about the law. That way, when I am faced with situations that have to do with legislation and regulation, I know more about it and I won't be left out of the loop.
Now, that's very interesting because I did not know that there's another degree or mm-hmm. another section of study that you can go. You know, but that really serves you well, especially if you had any heart at all for politics.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple of things in our time. I've got to get into this because, number one, when a person runs for office, that's a big deal. And it is, when you lose it, it's a big smash. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is, I know it's got to be a down. I happen to stand next in one of those election night mm-hmm. parties, mm-hmm. if you want to call it. And I was standing within two people. There was one person in between the candidate and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And when the very first, everyone had the monitor on, and the very first polls, right when they closed the polls, they came out. It was known from the beginning that this guy was not going to win.
Yep.
And it was, I mean, the attitude, the atmosphere in that room, it just plummeted.
Yep.
And, you know, so losing is not a fun thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you went through two of those.
Yeah. Yeah. You know.
Now, so tell me a little bit about what it was, the drive that was in you to embark on campaign number three.
Yeah. So, no, like you said, and this is why you see a lot of people who, when they do run, they're one and done, because it's extremely demoralizing. You know, you've kind of put yourself out there for people to see and for people to kind of just ridicule you or ask you questions. And, you know, sometimes you kind of have that self-doubt and that worry. But, you know, one thing that my dad used to tell me often is, you know, God hasn't given us a spirit of fear. So for me, it was kind of like, okay, you know, am I going to let this hurt me? You know, am I going to let this, you know, beat me up to the point where I can't do anything mm-hmm. about it? You know, I've always talked about persevering and trying to just take that next step and to better myself and to better the people around me. So I knew that I would actually have to at least give it one or two more tries. So that's kind of how it was presented to me in terms of actually wanting to come out and actually, you know, put my face out there. and, you know, finding the courage to run again.
Now, I commend you for that. I commend you for the courage, because then the other aspect of running for public office, and our listeners would know that I've had a number of people on here that we talk about these things and mm-hmm. the need for young people like yourself to get involved mm-hmm. because this is a crazy world. This is not our grandfather's world that we are living in right now. Mm-mm. It's an entirely different viewpoint, and so there are a lot of things that are going on. How do you approach this whole thing of listening to the people
yeah.
when we're living in basically a very divided culture right now?
Yeah, you know, it's honestly so important, especially, you know, just for the viewers and the listeners. I'm 28, and the next closest person on our city council is in their 50s or 60s.
I'm not surprised you know? At that at all.
So it's one of those things where I've had to kind of take a step back, take a deep breath, and kind of, you know, figure out that everybody comes from a different perspective. And it's my duty to be as objective as possible when given any information or when talking to anybody.
Everybody knows, tell us what it is your office that you won and what you're doing. Because I know you're also serving on a committee as well.
Yeah. So, you know, I am actually one of the city councilmen for the city of Claremont. And I've been in that position since January.
Mm.
You know, so I'm still relatively new, still learning. But you know, it's my duty to pick it up as quick as possible in order to better serve our residents.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also was just recently appointed to Volunteer Florida by the by Governor DeSantis. So you know, it's a community service is something that's near and dear to my heart, and helping people is something that I love doing.
And this is going back to what you studied in school and how perfect. You couldn't have had a better background in college to be studying mm-hmm. than what you've done. And I think that is just great. So political science is a major that many people who have a heart for politics, they'll go in. But you went the law.
Yep.
And, you know, that is such an important issue going on right now in this country is the rule of law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever happened to it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's something that we have to have.
Yeah. You know, it really is. And we've seen it happen throughout the years that interpretations are always kind of muddled. But, you know, in this day and age, it's kind of, it really is I'm flabbergasted, honestly, just at the amount that of, you know, misinterpretations that we've seen or just in terms of, you know, people reading something and taking something completely different than what is actually presented.
So in this day and age in which we're living here, Evo, this whole time frame of 2021, we're hopefully coming out of the COVID virus, the pandemic,
mm-hmm.
hopefully coming out of it. I say that guardedly,
yep.
but it is something that is getting better right now.
Yep.
And we have a country that is really hurting with supply chains.
Yep.
What are you hearing as people, what are they saying is the very first thing that people need to be doing?
Yeah. You know, honestly, just get involved, you know, whether it's in your city council, whether it's in your county commission, get out of your house, get involved, you know, talk to people. I think one of the things that people take for granted is just human connection in general. People think that they can just be on social media and try and make a change through there. And although that does make a change, it's, you know, you're going to see more tangible changes when you actually come outside of your house, talk to people, get involved.
When you say get involved, are you talking about going to the meetings?
Yes. You know, okay. Going to the meetings. Don't just be a Facebook warrior. Go to the meetings, ask questions. You know, if you need to email your elected officials, do that as well. You know, a lot of these times as elected officials, we don't hear enough from people, you know, so we definitely would love to have more people come out, talk to us, give us your opinion, you know, because if I look at something and I have, you know, say I have an opinion of something that I think may be right. If there's somebody else who has seen that same thing years back or, you know, weeks back and they've seen how it's worked, you know, having that perspective would be something that's beneficial to mm-hmm. myself.
What do you see happening now for your area? Claremont is a growing area. It's an exciting area.
It really is, you know, and with growth comes traffic.
Yeah, as that happens. Yeah.
I just drove down I-4 and I get it, you know, with yeah. growth comes traffic. So one of the big things that we're looking at right now is just making sure we're growing smartly and just making sure we're being a lot more proactive and not reactive. We've actually just hired a new city manager. And he has a lot of experience in terms of growing communities. So we're going to be looking at a lot more innovative planning and zonings and maybe looking at some things that will help alleviate some traffic concerns, at least on our state, local, and county roads.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very exciting. These are going to be times that I think most of us will remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think too many people are going to forget the 2 years, 20 and 21.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it didn't start off the way, I mean, my joke back then was, I'm excited about having 2020 vision. and then at the end of 2020, I thought, you know, no, I'm not so excited about that vision anymore. But we're hoping and believing God for some exciting things. And I know you mentioned you're about ready to get married.
Yes. So I, you know, my fiance and I have been together for about 3 years now, and we'll actually be getting married in December. So, you know, it's exciting. A lot of work. Wedding planning is a lot of work, you know, as alongside of being on council and just work in general. But, you know, we're extremely excited about it, and we've been blessed.
Well, 2022 will be a big year for you.
Yes, it will.
I didn't mean to rhyme right there, but maybe. Oh, my goodness. Ebo Insua, thank you for being here with us today and sharing your thoughts and really your enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And these are things that I pray just go out into others as well, and they'll be inspired to get involved and maybe attend some of those council meetings that you're talking about.
That would be great. You know, we love having a full audience out there. It really makes for our meetings to be a lot more interesting, to say the least.
That's awesome. Ebo, thank you for being here. And friends, thank you as well. We're going to catch you next time on Afternoons with Mike.